Great to be here. It's amazing to see a gathering like this. And I wish more of these kind of things would happen around the country. I'm get situated here. I think I'll just sit up here because I've got some PowerPoint and it'd be easier for you to kind of visually see all of this happen as I share with you some numbers and some stories of what I'm getting to see around the country within the next generation of Asian Americans. Tell you a little bit about myself. I've got a whole mix of stories and we'll get this going. All right, there we go. I grew up in a traditional Chinese family. Came to the U.S. when I was 8 years old, and my parents wanted to come to this new land for new opportunities for their three kids. I'm the oldest of three boys. We settled in the Washington, D.C. area. I grew up in Virginia, studied as an engineer, came to faith in college, and started to grow. And I realized I wanted to do something for our generation because I realized amongst my peers during those college years, a lot of them didn't know Christ, and churches weren't really connecting with them. So I threw myself out there, worked a few years as an engineer, and then went to seminary. So I went to Dallas Seminary for 5 years, did everything I could to be a pastor, and I pastored for 5 years. Graduated from seminary at Dallas Theological Seminary on a Saturday, got married on a Sunday to my wife, Rochelle, and just went after it, and worked 5 years as a pastor, and it's good, and I think I did some good things, but who needs another okay pastor? And so I realized, you know, God was throwing some things in me, and I kind of wandered through life, and later on became worked as a strategist with American Bible Society, started working with a private family foundation that had a similar heart, but just trying to figure out how to make this happen for empowering next generation Asian Americans. I'll mention that in a couple slides. But so I've done all kinds of different things: engineer, pastor, strategist, editor, researcher, facilitator, and a father. Wildest thing we did this year was this summer we downsized. So we moved from DC to OC. We drove cross country 4,000 miles. My wife and my son Jeremiah packed all the worldly belongings in an Xterra. We didn't have a moving truck, and we relocated to South Orange County, and we're in Aliso Viejo. I've been there 2 months now. So my wife is in the audience here, Rochelle. She's waving hello. And so that's been a huge change in our lives, and we're just getting acclimated. I'm new to the Southern Cal thing, but very nice weather, great atmosphere here, but a little too much traffic. So that was our family memory, and so we're embarking on this new thing. But what I've been doing the past 7 years, so I'm using this wireless mouse to trigger the slides, and it's not going to work. Okay, so if you can go to the next slide for me, Luann. Okay, so what I've done with L Squared Foundation, which is developing leadership and legacy for Asian Americans, is we've created two print-on-demand books. You know, the size of the market that we have as Asian Americans, it's kind of niche. It's still small, but it's emerging. And so we just created these two volumes as a resource to help those of you on the front line of ministry, Asian American youth ministry, and conversations about Asian American evangelical theology. So there's postcards in the back. You can kind of grab those and go online and order those books. Convenient home delivery right to you. And so there's a couple resources that we've created. Okay, next slide. I'll do it that way. So what I want to do this morning is give you a big picture and spark your imagination for what can happen for the next generation, what needs to happen for the next generation. Matthew 16:2-3, Jesus is commenting the scribes that when evening comes, you say it will be fair weather for the sky is red. And in the morning, today it will be stormy for the sky is red and overcast. You know how to interpret the appearance of the sky, but you cannot interpret the signs of the times. I want to share with you some of those signs of the time. Give you a couple of examples of what I've seen happen, and hope to spark your imagination for what you can do and pray for in your context and for the next generation. Next slide. So what I'm seeing, churches are dying around the country, around the world. Here's a church that's been converted into a bank. Next slide. Here's a church that's been converted into a theater. Next slide. Here's a church that's been converted into a nursery. Next slide. Here's a church in Tennessee that's been converted into a very nice upscale restaurant. Next slide. And so you can dine in and sit on the choir loft if you want. It's a beautiful building, but it's no longer a church. Next slide. Here's a church in England that's been turned into an art installation, so you can walk on water. Pretty cool, but it's no longer a church. Next slide. Here's a church in Washington, D.C. Used to be the Central Baptist Church. Next slide. And it is now a mosque. Churches have a natural progression over time in terms of an organizational life cycle, if I can use that term. And if we aren't sensitive to the signs of the time, how tragic is it to see these churches that just die and no longer hold forth the witness for Christ and hold forth the life that we can have in the gospel? So I'll shift and move into some numbers just to give you some data points that we could look at and have some conversations around. Next slide. More than 50 churches close every week in the U.S. Sometimes as high as 75, but just lots of churches closing their doors every day. Next slide. 80% of U.S. churches are plateauing or declining. Next slide. This is a chart that shows you there's a natural progression of how people organize and have a church as an organization and an organism. And it starts up with being very creative to just kind of grow the church, reach people. And it might get into this kind of a plateau phase that's management, just keeping things running, keeping the ministries going. And that might get a little defensive because there's so many changes going on in the surrounding community, but perhaps also internally as kids get older and they become teenagers and college kids and young adults and establish their own families. And churches can take a defensive posture, and what can and tends to happen is it'll decline. And it might shift into blaming. Well, we're holding on to the doctrines and holding on to the truths, and why aren't you guys, you know, being faithful? And churches will die. Next slide. Here's a big picture of what's happening with Asian Americans. 5% of the U.S. population is Asian American. Next. 14.4 million Asian Americans in the U.S., around 15 million now as we speak. These are estimates because census only happen every 10 years. Next slide. Give you a big pie chart. So most of those are Chinese Americans, 3.4 million or so. Next is Filipinos, Indians, Vietnamese, Korean, and Japanese. These are the top six most populous Asian American ethnicities. So there's a lot of diversity there, and sometimes we might be in our little segments, but I think in our common humanity and in our common history as marginalized minorities, we have more in common than we have different. And perhaps there's some things that can bring us together, and certainly Christ could do that. Looking ahead, next slide. 33.4 million Asian Americans will be in the U.S. by 2050. That's our lifetime. So we're looking at a population that we're a part of that will double. Double. And the question to ponder is, well, what is our churches and ministries doing to really serve this growing population. Related to that, are we serving our population well now? Next slide. 87% of Asian Americans are high school graduates. This is the highest percentage of any racial ethnic grouping. Next, 49% of Asian Americans are college graduates. Again, the highest percentage of any racial ethnic group. 20%, next slide. 20% of Asian Americans have graduate degrees. Again, the highest percentage of any ethnic group. So we're a highly educated racial ethnic grouping. Next. $61,094, the highest family median income of any racial group. So not only are we highly educated, we're also making good money on the whole. Okay, but that's not to perpetuate the model minority myth. Next, 11.1% is the poverty rate for single race Asians. So while many Asian Americans are accomplishing a lot in financially and educationally, there's also many Asian Americans in need in terms of poverty, in terms of mental health and other issues. Next, 17.9% do not have health insurance. Next. So I want to transition into what we can think about and dream about doing. When David had served God's purpose in his own generation, he fell asleep. He was buried with his fathers, and his body decayed. I want to focus on how David served his own generation. And to ask us to consider, how can we serve our generation and leave a legacy that could serve the following generation that will come after us? Next, 56% of Asian Americans are unchurched. That's a majority. Okay, so there's a lot of unchurched people. What can we do to reach them? Next, 26% of Asian Americans are under the age of 18. If we're thinking about the future, we got to figure out how to better reach our kids, how to reach teens, how to reach college, because that will set them on a better trajectory. Next, 69% of Asian Americans speak English very well. Now, as we look at churches, most of them, in the Asian American context, tend to be immigrant churches. And that's a good thing. But 69% of Asian Americans speak English very well. Perhaps we need more kinds of English ministries and perhaps more English-speaking churches to better reach this 69%. Next. So just give you some ballpark figures. These are estimates of how many Asian Americans are considered Chinese, Korean, Vietnamese, Japanese, and Hmong. So you can see there's many, many Korean churches doing great things. And there are a good number of Chinese churches. This is the U.S. and Canada. Okay, these are estimates. And most of these tend to be immigrant. Next. But I would like to suggest to you that we also need English-speaking independent churches. And Matthew 9:17 is how Jesus would describe kind of a paradigm or construct for this. Neither do men pour new wine into old wineskin. If they do, the skins will burst, the wine will run out, and the wineskins will be ruined. No, they pour new wine into new wineskin, and both are preserved. The connection I like to make is immigrant churches are kind of the old wineskin, and they need to continue doing what they're doing, but they also have the authority, the power, the wisdom and experience that can also establish and pray and launch out new wineskins. And in so doing, both will be preserved. To say it another way, we need all kinds of churches to reach all kinds of people. And the next generation, in this pluralistic, wealthy nation, think differently, they have different needs, and they engage the gospel and live it out in different ways. I'm going to run through the rest of the slides a little more quickly. Next slide. Four stages of organizational decline. Again, the chart I mentioned to you earlier. I want to show you a way to get out of that. Next slide. This is called the sigmoid curve. And so as an organization plateaus towards point A or top of the curve, what you can do to revitalize this is to think of new ways of doing what you're doing or new things that you need to be doing and hopefully take the green curve up instead of riding out the plateau towards point B. And the shaded part that I have on this chart is kind of the window of opportunity. So as you discern that your church is kind of in maintenance mode and running its course, spark some creativity, create room to experiment, try new things, and you can ride the curve up and revitalize your church and or ministry. Now I'm going to tell you some stories of what I've seen happen specifically that people are taking this new window of opportunity to try some new things. Next. This is a picture of the Southeast Asian Leaders Conference that Ken Kong mentioned earlier. 165 Southeast Asian leaders from 9 ethnicities gathering together. This is in 2006, and they're going to do it again in March of 2008. So not only are things happening with East Asians, Southeast Asian leaders are realizing by coming together that it encourages each of us, it gives us a sense that we're not in this alone, and it gives us the energy and the creativity to push through and do some other great and creative things. Next slide. Next generation South Asian leaders are also gathering. This just happened 2 weeks ago in New York City. They had about 200 South Asian leaders, Indian, Pakistani, and so on. Second generation emerging leaders coming together to pray, to dream, and to get trained. Exciting stuff that's happening in those segments of Asian Americans. Next slide. There's a picture of Evergreen LA right here. The story of this church is really inspiring to me because here's a church that's 73 years old, and they've made the transition from a Japanese immigrant church to a second generation to a more pan-Asian and now multi-ethnic and multi-socioeconomic reaching their community. And so here's a church that's withstood the test of time and the changing cultures and the changing community to continue being a witness for Christ. And that's the kind of thing I'm suggesting as we talk about revitalizing churches. How can we make those shifts as society changes to continue being a witness for Christ? Next slide. New Song Church started in 1994 in Irvine, and it's multiplied into multiple campuses in North Orange County, Los Angeles, Bangkok, and more that's coming up the pipeline. And they're reaching the marginalized and the misfits in a third culture mindset and living out this theology of discomfort to reach the lost. But I want to mention those two because those are kind of the ones that are on our radar. But I want to mention to you four more that you may not have heard of. Next slide. This church is called Quest Church in Seattle. Founded by Eugene Cho in 2001, he had a heart for the community to be urban, to establish church that would be urban, multi-generational, and multi-ethnic. Five core values, concern about the human soul, the community, compassion and justice, and global. And as God's been stirring things in their midst, they renovated a warehouse into a coffee house. That's what's pictured here, and they host worship services there while being a coffee house during the week. And God's been moving in their neighborhood that a neighboring church called Interbay, which was a dying, mostly Anglo congregation, decided to gift their whole building to this church and merged together. And this just happened this summer. And so churches are coming together to continue their witness, but breathing in new life because of creativity and a new leader that has a heart for the new generation. Another church, next slide, in Chicago called Lakeview. This is led by a pastor named Joshua Kang. It emerged out of a Korean English ministry and now has become a more multi-ethnic, multi-site ministry church, a church for the unchurched. And their strategy is by having different campuses with different demographics, but yet a common DNA, they can provide a more effective and efficient ministry and witness to Chicago that would reach the next generation. Next slide. This church is Grace Covenant Church in Philadelphia. This is a college campus church. So there's about 400 or 500 college-age kids that have church on their college campus. They're running three sites around Philadelphia, reaching a lot of young people, exciting them with a kingdom vision to serve God in whatever capacity God would call them to. And pretty multi-ethnic, but reaching that college age and giving them the gospel and kind of giving them a roadmap for how they can live out their faith. Next slide. Vox Venia. This is kind of a Latin name. It stands for Voice of Grace. And this church was started by Gideon Tseng. He's a pastor's kid, Chinese-Canadian. And it was incubating as a college ministry of Austin Chinese Church for the past 5 years. And in September of 2006, they launched out and established their own independent English ministry, mostly Asian, but they're beginning to reach deeper into their community. They call themselves Asian Fusion. And this church is really looking for ways that they can be a voice of grace to the community of Austin. Most recently, 5 or 6 families in their church moved into East Austin, into the inner city, so that they can live out the gospel and be a blessing to that community. I have a short video clip that Luann will transition over just to give you a quick overview of what's happening in Austin, Texas, of all places. Followers of Christ and Christian leaders are realizing, hey, God's doing new things in our new generation, and they're trying new things. They're looking for ways to reach the next generation. It's just exciting to see this is happening all around the country. It's no longer an isolated thing happening on the West Coast. It's happening all around the country. And so just want to share a few of those stories with you. Here's what I've seen. Next slide. Over 100 English-speaking, Asian-led, multi-Asian, multi-ethnic churches have been planted and launched in the past 10 years. This is an exponential growth that I'm seeing around the country, and I think it's a trend that will be with us, and I think it will reach a lot of people of Christ, and it will bring about a greater witness for Christ to the community around us. Next slide. Here's a church that's pretty progressive, in a sense. They were featured on the cover of Outreach magazine. The name of the church is Sarong Community Church, right here in Anaheim. They're one of the largest Korean churches in America. And they've established a fund for church planting of $50,000 for second generation Korean and other minorities to plant churches intentionally to reach the next generation. Just to give you a concrete example of what a immigrant church or even your established church could do to really help kickstart this new movement of new churches to reach new people. Give you a couple bullet points just to bring this home. What can existing churches do? Encourage creativity. One of the things that young people have is energy and creativity. And you match that up with experience and resources, all kinds of things can happen. Encourage creativity in your context to try new things. Fail fast, but boy, create, because we're made in the image of God, and He's the ultimate creator. And let's tap into that. Let's create some new things, new songs, new churches for the next generation. Secondly, raise up young leaders. I'm not sure how to say this, but I think something in our heritage and culture doesn't develop leaders fast enough for the times that we're in. We're in a fast-moving culture, we're in a wealthy nation, and things move very fast, and they seem to be moving even faster, and we have to raise up young and new leaders faster to really do what we are called to do. Thirdly, support church planting with prayer, people, and funds. Just to overstate the obvious. Craig Rochelle is an Innovate pastor that the other organization I work with, Leadership Network, has come alongside and helped develop innovative churches. And he says it this way: to reach people no one is reaching, you have to do things that no one else is doing. Can we give one another the grace and the permission to do that? And bathe it with prayer and see where God would move. And I think God can do some amazing things as we're yielded to Him and as we move in faith. Closing picture, let's see a new horizon where 1,000 flowers can bloom. Churches and ministries all across this land, and certainly all around the world, because we're in a global village now, we need to see new kinds of things happen in our next generation. That's going to bring life. That's going to bring life not just to new people. That's going to bring life to our traditional churches that are looking for, well, you know, where's God moving? Well, God's moving. We just need to join what He's doing. Okay, I want to open up the rest of the time for Q&A. These are a couple websites just for us to stay connected. DJTron.com, that's my personal site. And Elsewhere Foundation, Developing Leadership and Legacy for Asian Americans. I've got the postcards in the back for you if you want to get our website. There's a couple more papers that are back on the table. This is a survey that I did of Asian American churches. You can download it, but I've got a few printed copy if you want something in your hand. This gives you more statistical analysis of a survey I've done with English-speaking ministries and churches of what's happening around the country. Okay.
I'm Phil with the microphone, so I'll be like Phil. So if you have a question, I want to have you guys address the whole audience, and you can stay up here with your mic, and I'll run the questions out. Comments, questions? Why don't you state your name and who you work with, too?
Yeah. My name is Steve Pong. I work with Tom and Joe and the Epic team of Campus Society. So the question comes out of the context as you've been looking at the news, and you look at the mental health issues, you look at Virginia Tech, you look at the depression rates of Asian Americans, you look at, you know, just booming, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, sometimes it's said that the area of discipleship most often left out of the Asian American church is the area of emotions. So the question is, you know, there's churches that address grace. There's churches in Northern Cal, where I'm from, GRS, that has an intentional things. But just generally, what have you, as I think about the increasing Asian American demographic in the United States, how can we not just make sure we reach Asian Americans, but how can salvation specifically address these mental health issues as CNN, of course, returning to Buddhism and other means to address what I believe, of course, overlaps with the spiritual issue.
Yeah.
So just with your perspective,
That's a very needed thing that we need churches that can demonstrate and live out grace and move us away from the shame-based heritage that we have. And grace brings about healing and forgiveness and imperfection. I didn't want to start with this in my personal story because it's such a loaded thing, but I'm a graduate of Virginia Tech, 1988. And I struggled with the very same issues that the shooter dealt with. And by the grace of God, that churches and mentors and people have come alongside me to speak grace and lived grace around me to bring about that healing. But it's still a recurring struggle. I just had a bout with depression last week. And so I'm in the midst of that. And so I look for churches that can offer me a hand of grace. And I'm finding them around the country, but I don't think there's enough of them. And it's very hard to change an existing institution or organization. But if you can give life to a new one and start fresh, start new, start with grace, that can leave a lasting legacy. It's very needed. I don't have a specific answer to that, but it's very needed. Grace really is needed for our next generation. And everybody needs it, grace.
Mention a blog if you want to. Only if you want
to. Yeah. I just wrote up a little episode about my issue with depression 2 days ago. DJChuan.com. You can take a look at how I'm sorting through that issue for myself.
Hey, DC, how you doing? Kevin Ha.
Yeah.
You talked on the email, telephone, but first time meeting. My question was about the 100+ Asian Americans / multi-ethnic churches that have been planted in the last 10 years. Can you elaborate a little bit more on Asian-led multi-ethnic churches and what success they're having and what form or what are some of the particularities that make it more successful or stuff like that?
Good, thank you. The question is what's happening with these new churches, the 100 or so that I've identified that are independent? And what are they doing? The survey gives you a little snapshot of that, so you can download these or grab the few that are in the back. I think the main thing that comes to mind is they're trying new things. And typically they have an entrepreneurial leader as the lead pastor or the church planter. So it takes someone with that kind of a DNA and wiring to try something new and step out in faith and provide the strong leadership that's needed to establish a new church. That's probably the one key ingredient. Second key ingredient is they have to try new things. Because we're in a pluralistic, high-quality kind of a society. And so second-rate teaching or second-rate ministries, not going to do it. You really have to try some new things that engage people where they're at. And so that's high-quality production, that's community service, social justice, and living out grace. Grace is so attractive. And so most of these new churches are living out grace.
Hi.
Hey, thank you. See you.
Hey, Pinnan with Korean Churches for Community Development. I actually want to respond to the mental health question, but also then I hope I can ask the question too. I guess just in terms of that, after the Virginia Tech event, our organization reached out to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services just in response that President Bush said, he called out to the federal agencies to say, look into the matter and make sure you prevent such things from happening in the future. And I just knew that if they go about doing the things that they normally do, they would not really look at Asian community, they would just look at it as this broad mental health issue. And so we brought to them the importance of the fact that Asian youth, particularly deliberately, follow a different pattern of behavior. They don't usually work anywhere. They usually do academically well, which is usually, when they don't do well academically, that's the first sign in which the powers of the intervene. But Asians don't do that. And so anyway, through that conversation, we asked for a National Asian Youth and Family Summit, and they took great interest as well. Unfortunately, that person had to step down, but the conversation is going forward. And so for those of you who are interested, I would love to speak with you. But in relation to that mental illness, there are efforts within the city that are trying to mobilize Asian American pastors in response. And so again, I go to a lot of these community meetings and Asian American pastors are not there. And so when you look at the fact that there's 100 plus churches that are out there that are formed in the last 10 years, and I look for leadership of Asian American pastors, they're not as visible. I don't think they don't exist, but they're not as visible in the circles where decisions are being made. And so first I'd like to call out to say, you know, at least with our organization, we're involved with a lot of efforts. For example, Senator Mark Willie Thomas has convened the Interfaith Committee to address some of the gang violence. And I see that for a lot of Asian pastors, there's kind of a disconnect. When they talk about the youth in their community, they're all for it, but the word gang doesn't seem to connect with our youth. But the juvenile delinquency rate has increased only in the Asian community in the last 20 years. Every other group has decreased. The fastest growing gang population in LA County are 20,000, are Asians with 20,000. So I just want to say this is all relevant issue, and as an organization we're involved in a lot of discussions, and we're not a church. And when we're in these meetings, they're saying, okay, we want to involve the Asian pastors. And when I turn around, there aren't as many. And it may be our fault. But if you are interested, I'd like to extend an invitation for many of these things, whether it's mental health, gang, marriage, which again, it's huge marriage issue, but the federal government refuses to invest in the Asian American community because they think that we're doing okay, which is so far from the truth. But anyway, so going back to some of your slides, it's very impressive, particularly the fact that 68% speak English very well. I see kind of a disconnect between what exists, and I would think that if 68% speak English very well, there should be this plethora of English-speaking booming ministries. And I might be wrong, I don't see it as much. I don't see pastors, you know, at the level like Pastor Ken Fong or Pastor, you know, Dave Gibbons, someone out there. But even at their level, they're not out there in the mainstream where people would just throw out names. And so I would just, again, love to see that happen because I believe and know that there's great leadership in our community. But I think one next step is engaging with the other stakeholders who are making decisions on behalf of our community. So going back to you, Jay, so thank you for those statistics. I'm wondering just in terms of, again, going back to the churches that you've seen, or maybe churches you have not seen, you know, what are some of those missing factors that could take it to that next level, especially the community development arena?
Good. Thank you. Hey, Ben, you've done great work over the years in serving the community and helping to kind of break that model minority myth. So I really appreciate what you shared. The number is staggering. 69% speak English very well, and we don't see more English-speaking churches and more leaders among English-speaking Asian Americans. It's a huge opportunity, and I don't know what it's going to take to have more of a step into that. I think there's a little bit of hesitancy because of our Asian heritage that keeps us from leadership. In an Anglo context, you ask for volunteers that want to lead something, you got 10 hands going up. In an Asian context, you ask for leaders, it's like you push someone else in there. So there's something self-defeating, if I can say it that way, in our heritage that keeps us from raising new leaders. And it just takes a few leaders to kind of turn that around, because part of leadership is cultivating a new culture. And I think we've got the capacity, because we do have very high education and we do have those that are very accomplished. And if there's a way we can connect that capacity with the real needs mentally and developmentally, we have to serve our own. I think the government's still not going to see us even as we try to get there, but we have to serve our own. I think the first generation has the capacity to do that. Those of us in our generation have capacity to do that, and we need some vision and leadership to really speak that out, call that out. Another opportunity is we don't have a gathering like this on a national level or even a regional level that happens often enough for us to get to know each other well enough to build the trust and to begin moving towards the kind of initiatives that you're doing. So when you call something and you're putting together great programs, where are the Asian American pastors? Yeah, well, because we don't know each other. And so I really commend Lewis and Tom and Ben and Tommy for pulling a gathering like this, but this kind of thing needs to happen more often on a regional and on a national level, and someone needs to do that.
Thank you.
We have about 5 minutes left, so keep your questions real short, and let's stop here.
My name is Vince Arnaldo. I pastor a Filipino American church in Southern Orange County. And I'm basically a first generation pastor. It's predominantly a first generation church. But one of the things that I grapple with is I find there's a huge divide between first generation immigrants and their second generation children. There's a lot of communication gap there. And I don't know if there's been any study done or there's anything being done in terms of addressing this problem, because I'm finding it's very, very common, and it's an issue where I have tried to look for resources. I'm not finding that there's a whole lot of them out there.
Okay, thanks for the question. That's a recurring issue I hear across the board, the intergenerational tensions and gaps and the cultural differences, the language differences. And while we have a very strong family value, we don't really know how to navigate differences. And perhaps Grace would speak to us and say, can we just respect those differences and allow our differences to bloom rather than try to force a connection on every level? That, reframe in a way, our connection is to Christ, but it can be expressed differently. And if we can allow room for that, that would be great. Related to that, we've got hundreds and thousands of pastors and leaders trying to work on that issue. And there's been a few books that have been published in the past 20 or 30 years addressing that issue. But it seems like it's just a cultural wall. You've got hundreds and thousands of people working on that issue and they're not making progress. Can we try some new things to say, well, let's let new things blossom and allow that to breathe life into our cultural diversity mix rather than trying to tackle the issue that we're just not making a lot of progress on. So I'm reframing and shifting that, say, well, let's just try some new things, allow Christ to be glorified in new and different ways rather than to force a conformity and force a connection that may not always happen.
DJ, my name is James Yu with EFC. We're primarily an immigrant church, and listening to this, a lot of your presentations, well, the questions have been asked, some of the issues of mental, emotional health issues, as well as cultural issues. And I think a lot of our problems stem from the immigrant culture. A lot of the problems stem from the first generation. Out of 5,000 plus churches, with mostly our immigrant churches still. And there's maybe only a couple hundred that you're talking about that are Asian American ministry. Mm-hmm. What are we doing in challenging our first generation immigrant church? What can we do?
We need good leaders in the second generation that can be gracious to speak into that context. I don't speak Mandarin very well, but we need some bilingual people to facilitate the communication. I think what you're doing is tremendous because you're an English pastor within an intergenerational immigrant church, and you're doing some programs to cultivate cross-cultural understanding, and that's great on a local level, and we need some of that on the regional and national level. And I don't know who's going to step into that. I realize I can't. But I think getting people in the same room, looking at each other, talking about it. People have tried that for many years, but I think we need new leaders that can navigate those differences.
Unfortunately, this is going to be the last question because I'm hungry.
Okay. I'm Mark Lacanienta with Household of Faith in Irvine, and one of my questions, not only with the intergenerational issue, is with the second generation, are you seeing out there more churches that are working together cross-culturally within the Asian community? I mean, right now I still see, you say Asian, you still see a divide between Asian, Chinese, Filipino, Korean. I'm not seeing more of an intercultural mix in that regard. Are you seeing that around the country happening?
Yeah, I am seeing that around the country, and here's another funny thing about Asian American. If you call yourself an Asian American church, it doesn't really attract people initially, And we aren't all that comfortable talking about our cultural heritage issues. But if you've got a church that's mostly Asian, they come. So you don't have to call yourself Asian American. You don't have to talk about Asian American issue, but there's a sociological fabric, and this is a whole area that they don't teach us in seminary about the sociology of religion that, not playing into the homogeneous unit principle, don't hear me that, but in the next generation, because they're in a multicultural setting, and that's the message they see and live and see in the movies, they go to school, they shop, and they live all of life with a whole mix of people, and then church is different, and that's a disconnect. And so if you're able to just establish a church that's culturally relevant in a more multicultural sense, it tends to bring everyone together, even across East Asian, Southeast Asian, and South Asian lines. And it takes a visionary leader to kind of put some of the constructs to make that happen, cultivating a culture of grace just among second generation people seems to be the common denominator. That if we know how to reach out to those who are different than us, they come together.
All right, I got one more question. Since I'm the MC, I can do that. But how many people still have questions? That's it? I think we have a lot of questions. Okay, I think there's a lot of issues that we're still dealing with, a lot of processing that will come up henceforward. DJ, is there a way that we can ask those questions, that we can all see them at the same time, and we can all interact with those questions? And can you tell us a way to interact with that?
Well, two places. The easiest way is either my personal site, which is djchuan.com. So we've been having ongoing conversations just kind of through the blogosphere, and we do a monthly conference call with nextgenerationchurch.com. I'll put all those links on my website. I don't know if they can bring the slide back up so you can grab. I don't have any cards. I'm all digital, so. But I'm real. I'm right here, see? So we have ongoing conversations kind of through the blogosphere, and there's more, percentage-wise, there's more Asian Americans online than any other racial ethnic group. So we can have these conversations in the comfort of your own bedroom or living room.
Nice.
And kind of open up conversation beyond just this gathering. And then secondly, we have a blog at L Squared Foundation where we kind of highlight the key issues, a little more formal approach to raise statistics and examples and best practices. Okay, so it's on the web.
I wanted to plug that because that's where it's a place where we can all share interactively with these questions. But I want to pray for DJ, and then we'll give him a big hand after this, okay? Lord Jesus, again, I thank you for DJ's friendship. I'm thanking DJ, but I'm thanking you, Lord, for his transparency and the way that you've allowed him to struggle and be honest with that, to bring about healing not only in himself, but our community as well. I pray, Father, that you continue to use this man in the digital world as a networker and as a place where we can bring questions and our hearts to each other in a very creative way. We pray this in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen.
Let's give him a gigantic hand.
Thank you.